This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Internet of Things and the People's Republic of China. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, is with me. And we're very pleased to be joined by Charles Burton of the McDonnell Laurier Institute. He's in Canada, helping us to understand a process that's underway, the Internet of Things, and the People's Republic of China's ambition to surveil, to spy, to possess, to steal routinely around the world secrets, inventions, loyalty, questions about dissent. All of that is an ambition by the People's Republic of China. It sounds grandiose, all things all the time. The Internet of Things, I learned from a recent article at the London Times, is a mode for China to realize its dreams. Charles Parton is the author of the report by Washington-based consultancy firm OODA. And this report is written up in the Daily Telegraph, and a quote from Charles Parton in the London Times tells the story. "We are not yet awake to this threat," says Mr. Parton. "China has spotted an opportunity to dominate this market, and if it does so, it can harvest an awful lot of data, as well as making foreign countries dependent." He goes on to say, "It is time to wake up. Free and open countries should ban Chinese-manufactured Internet of Things modules from their supply chains as soon as possible." We welcome Charles Burton to help us understand modules. What is a module? Is one watching me now, Charles? Good day to you.
Good day. Well, I think that, you know, modules are certainly elements within larger systems. And in this case, they are ways for example, cars to function without drivers. Sophisticated 5G technology will allow the car to know how fast to go and how to avoid crashing into whatever's in front of it. And certainly in terms of things like surgery, you can have modules that allow surgeons in New York to engage in heart surgery on people in Alabama. So, you know, this internet modules are very significant in terms of carrying a terrific amount of data in almost real time that facilitate transformation of how we engage in exchange of products and information and services. So, previously, I think we had been concerned about Huawei 5G, that a company that's beholden to the Chinese Communist regime would be required to put backdoor routines into telecommunications hardware and software solutions that would allow the Chinese to engage in espionage in terms of getting information about critical infrastructure or downloading databases. And certainly we've had concerns about Chinese manufactured communications devices. But what I think we're rapidly becoming aware of is that almost everything has an internet connectivity these days, from our refrigerators to our air conditioners. And the machinery, the modules that are providing the kind of capability to more efficiently operate these gadgets is coming from China and is almost certainly providing the Chinese state with the capability to collect a huge amount of data on what's going back and forth. I mean, for example, Department of Defense might be engaging in repairs or updating of weaponry, and the suppliers would be using this 5G technology and the Chinese equipment to ensure the supply chains are efficient in terms of producing the product and getting it to the right place at the right time. We provide a bonanza of information for the Chinese military on our weaponry capabilities and weaknesses in the system and which weapons are out of action because they need to be fixed, et cetera, et cetera. The implications are huge.
Gordon, you have a question for Charles.
Charles, it's not only the surreptitious stealing of data, it's also the ability to control 5G Internet of Things devices. So, for instance, you know, turn on your TV and you'll see a lot of advertisements for companies that can lock your front door remotely, and they think that's a great thing. Well, if you can remotely lock or unlock your front door, so can China. And it seems to me that we've got to consider not just the surreptitious taking of data, but the control of devices as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, there already have been examples of subway systems where the manufacturer in China has been able to lock and open the doors remotely from the other side of the planet. So providing this capability to Chinese manufacturers is frightening. And I think we really have to consider whether we want Chinese regime-controlled manufacturers controlling so many critical aspects of our life. You know, in times of conflict, if the refrigerator stops working or starts to heat up instead of cooling down because China has that capability, it could be enormously disruptive in a myriad of small ways that would be overall crippling to our capability to defend ourselves and defend our sovereignty and security.
The London Times article quotes a member of the chairwoman of the Commons of Parliament Foreign Affairs Select Committee, alarmed by this. And the question of Huawei is always in the news in Britain, in Canada, in the United States. So I ask about Canada. Is it the government in Ottawa? Is it now alarmed the way at least this speaker for the Commons is alarmed by this?
I haven't heard anything beyond the sort of general statements that Canada is concerned about security. The question really is the extent to which the Canadian government can do more than virtue signal and express concern and say it's a high priority, and when actual action will be taken. I mean, obviously, we need to have a review mechanism to ensure that the Chinese manufactured equipment does not have a critical role in infrastructure and other necessary ways to maintain our society functioning in terms of the economy and transportation and supply. The proof in the pudding is the government actually in stopping the Chinese product from entering the Canadian market. And there will be a lot of kickback against that from obviously vested economic interests who are beholden to direction from the Chinese authorities. So, you know, we need more than simply talking about this. We need to take some action on it. And obviously, we need to take action on it with a high sense of urgency because of the pervasiveness and rapid growth of these technologies, evidently largely under Chinese regime control.
Gordon, you've said in the past to me whenever I ask one of these why questions, you say they're arrogant. So I'll ask it again and see if that's the answer. Why would the leadership in Beijing go ahead with this obvious corruption of electronic devices, knowing that it's known about, knowing that they're suspect, knowing that Huawei has been rejected because of these very practices of spying on people with technology? Why would they continue it, Gordon?
They'll continue it, John, because they can get away with it, as Charles just talked about in connection with Canada. But it's not just a Canada problem, it's elsewhere. China wants to dominate the world. And as I mentioned before, Chinese ruler Xi Jinping has been pushing this notion that China is the world's only sovereign state and that the rest of us are colonies. And if it gives China the ability to realize that dream, then China is going to implement it.
You have a question for Charles.
Charles, do you foresee a future where Trudeau changes his mind about China, or that the Canadian population just gets sick and fed up and elect somebody who's not so China friendly?
Well, we haven't seen it yet. Certainly, the public opinion polls suggest a high degree of dissatisfaction with Canada's China policy. The government attempts to appease these by making promises and most recently an Indo-Pacific strategy statement. But in terms of actual substantive measures that would cause the Chinese regime to be unhappy with the Canadian political elite who may in retirement derive benefit from some China opportunities, we're not seeing the substantive action that we're looking for. And I think it is causing a problem in terms of Canada's participation in global institutions. You know, the United States is unhappy with Canada's not really coming to the plate to deal with the Chinese threat, malign activities both domestically in Canada and internationally. And I think other countries, particularly Japan, to some extent South Korea, certainly India, very much Australia, are really questioning whether Canada is a reliable ally that can be counted on when push comes to shove. And I think the government of Canada really has to acknowledge that there is this feeling among our allies, and that we won't be able to play both sides of the street and be, you know, appeasing to China on the one hand and claiming to our allies that we are solid allies who will be there in times of conflict, if there is a conflict with China in the Indo-Pacific over the South China Sea or over Taiwan.
Quickly, Charles, 30 seconds. The Ardern resignation in New Zealand, does that impact Ottawa in any fashion? Does that influence decisions by Trudeau? Because she was China-friendly and Trudeau's China-friendly. 30 seconds.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, Ms. Ardern's retirement is based on the idea that she just felt she couldn't continue, that the job was too much for her. And I think there's certainly a perception in Canada that our prime minister is in a similar sort of situation. He seems distracted, bored, right, lacking vision and ideas. And I think a lot of people in his party feel that it's time for him to give way to someone who has a bit more vigor, vision and gravitas. And let's hope that happens soon.
Charles Burton, MacDonald Laurier Institute, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bush.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.